Phil Hendry.
And welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show on this very auspicious day. It is a Tuesday. It is, I think, the 7th or the 8th of May, but we did a very, very significant pre-show. In our pre-show, we talked to our backstage pass members and any and all people that were visiting from around the world, and we were taking questions and answering questions, and it's been our very, very great as you know, just our great and our heartfelt and our very warm and beloved experience.
Phil, why don't you know, you're always telling people to spit it out.
I'll spit it out, okay?
The warm, the beloved.
Yeah, it sounds like a bowel movement.
Shut up.
Why does he have to do that?
I don't know, but I don't want to talk about it right now. Our final show on the Talk Radio Network will be on the 24th of June. And we're very much looking forward to providing for our fans a show that is going to expand. It's not going to change. We're going to bring back the phone call content, and we're going to expand the, if you will, the reach in terms of topic and in terms of content. We're going to take advantage of the opportunities that are being afforded audio artists, radio artists, whatever you want to call us, comics, to go places where no smartass has gone before.
That's
like on a Star Trek.
Yeah, that's why I...
That's why I did it, man. You did like a Star Trek?
Yes, bud. What is it with you, man? Yes, that's what I'm doing. I'm just like...
I'm just trying to figure it out.
What's to figure out?
Well, you go where no man has gone before, and I go, is that Star Trek?
No, I didn't say that. I said where no smartass has gone before.
That's what James Kirk said.
No, James Kirk didn't say that. He said where no one has gone before. You see, the sexist attitude...
Can we just not talk about that right now?
Fine.
Where no one, no man, no smartass has gone before, that's where we're going with our radio show, our podcast, and all other related content as of the first week in July. July 1, we will kick off with a brand new two-hour. And we also are very, very grateful to the affiliates that we've had over the years. And to that end, we have had many affiliates express to us that they would like to remain with the Phil Hendry Show. So this is an option that I wasn't exactly planning for, but it isn't one that we are going to that we're going to reject. We appreciate the support of our affiliates that do want to come with us with our radio show. So we will have mainly a digital presence, but we will make the show available terrestrially to stations that have long wanted our show or have been with us and like having it and have had good audience response. We'll stay with you. Don't worry about it. But we're going to, as I said, what we're going to do is essentially sort of reinvigorate certain aspects of the show. And among them, there were the phone call bits that we did that I know people loved so much. I love doing them, you know, but you can only do what you can do, you know.
Well, are you going to get into some of the reasons?
No, I'm not going to get into any reasons. You can only do what you can do, and we did what we did, and we do what we did. I mean, we don't...
You do what you... Well, you do. Yes.
No, I don't do. We do what we do.
That's essentially what he's saying, though.
Yeah, you do.
I know. You don't say you do.
You do what you do.
Right. I'm not saying you do.
Come on, man. You don't have to get bogged down in this. You do.
Oh, okay. I won't get bogged down in it. I'll just say I do.
Yeah, that's the way to say it.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to say it like that.
So you are getting bogged down.
No, I'm not getting bogged down. I'm the host of the show.
Oh, you're pulling the race card then, yeah.
No, that's not pulling the race card. What an idiot. The race card?
That's not pulling the race card. Well, it is sort of.
No, it ain't pulling the race card. Here's what I'm pulling. Rank.
Well.
Oh, you're doing the... You're a filthy little...
You said pulling it.
In any event, folks, so that's what we're going to be doing here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, proceeding as to in the first month of July. And as I said, for our affiliates, a family of affiliates that we've had down through the years, great and small, large and teeny, big and swollen and itsy-bitsy and just limp.
Do you mind?
Sorry. We do thank you, and we love you, and we just want to grab... I want to squeeze you. I want to grab your ass. Is that wrong to say?
Well, it's not a very loving... What do you mean, grab their ass? A radio station?
I'm saying figuratively, I love them and I want to... And if I had my arms around them, I would... They're not a real woman.
Well, what if they're a guy?
I wouldn't be squeezing their ass.
So is a radio station...
In my mind, is a woman. And...
Well, that's kind of rude to squeeze a lady's ass.
Yes, very rude.
Well, they're part of my family. They're one of my wives, if you will. So we love you and we appreciate you very much, all of the affiliates that we've had, to the point where, yes, figuratively, I would have my arms around you and I'd give your ass just a little bit of a, you know, kind of a horn honking squeeze, depending upon what kind of horn you have. Okay, Margaret, you know.
I got to use the toilet.
Yeah, go use the toilet. Our number, 877-876-PHIL. We're online at philhendryshow.com. Bizarre stories today. One of them, a sea monster washes on shore in New Zealand. That's right. That's right. We had the picture for our BSPs on Phil TV in HD. We also ran the little video clip. I couldn't hear the audio, but look at this thing. And you can follow along if you're not, if you don't have Phil TV. You can grab a hold of a picture, it's probably all over the place, of this thing that washed ashore on the beaches of New Zealand, and it is about as funky a looking thing as you've ever seen. And so humans being what they are, they thought it was a creature from the deep or some kind of a monster. And I think what we can do a little bit later on in the program, maybe not right away, is get maybe have Dr. Ron Tarner weigh in on it, because they're not sure what it is, although there are marine biologists and marine experts and oceanographers, although oceanography is not really marine life. Marine biologists.
What about like a marine zoo?
Yes, are there marine zookeepers?
Marine zookeepers? What is that?
Animals. Oh, get him, bud.
Yeah, it's animals that live in the water, God.
Yeah, I know about animals that live in the water. No, I haven't heard of a marine zookeeper.
Well, what do you call an aquarium?
An aquarium.
Well, yeah, but what's the guy that takes care of it?
It ain't a marine zookeeper. It's a marine biologist. So we're going to talk with some experts here. We come back, if you, Bud, will do your job and get him on the phone. But you look at this thing, and the opinion has been proffered. There's a cool word, huh? You know, I'm squeezing the station's ass.
Yes, you're squeezing the station's ass, and then you use a 50-cent word like that. If the station was a real woman, and you squeezed its ass and then pulled a word out like that, I think they'd think you're gay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, sure, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that's... Thanks for that really solid thinking there, Margaret.
Well, you're the one with the whole I'd squeeze your ass.
In any event... You take a look at this creature, and I am given to believe that it is identifiable. Some people think it's a killer whale. And what happens is any animal, any human for that matter, in the state of decomposition and decay, there is shrinking, literally, in the actual volume, the size of the creature. So it doesn't look like a whale because there's been dehydration, there's been shrinking and decay, and just the decomposition of this creature causes all of these tissues to shrink and kind of make the entire animal seem smaller, and it will begin to show a much more sharp and striking profile. Whales, we're so used to seeing whales with those big jowls, you know, as they go swimming through the water. They look like they got this big head and big jowls. But once the animal... is beginning to decompose, it looks a little bit more like it's got a needle-nose beak on it. In fact, I've heard whales referred to as creatures that have sort of beak-like jaws. And looking at this...
How do you know it's not a shark or something? Yeah, right there. That's what I'm thinking too, man. That's a shark.
Why do you think it's a shark?
Well, look at the teeth.
Yeah, and the killer whales have teeth too, you know?
Yeah, I know, but look at how... Are you trying to tell me that's a whale? That'll look like a shark to me. That thing will eat you up.
Yeah, and sharks don't eat people, man.
What?
They don't eat people. They bite into us to see if we're something they want to eat, and they don't.
Well, why don't they figure it out?
What do you mean, why don't they figure it out? What does that mean, why don't they figure it out?
Phil, relax. My God.
Yeah, well, we're asking, how come they haven't figured it out yet?
It ain't like a whale passes information on to the little whales, and they go to whale school. Oh, and by the way, this creature here, that's a human. Don't ever bite that one, because it tastes like homemade dung, okay? They don't do that.
But the mothers, when they are nursing the young...
What do you think happens in the whale world? That with the mother's milk comes all this information? And not whales, but what are we talking about?
We're talking about sharks.
Yeah.
Sharks, yeah. Do you think the sharks pass this along to the tiny sharks? Sharks don't even give a damn about their kids. Whales love their children. Sea lions love their children because they're mammals. Sharks, they could give a damn. Sharks' kids, no wonder sharks have kids that go out and murder and commit mayhem and butcher people up because they got no parenting. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhenryshow.com, your digital home for all that is the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Get a backstage pass. When we come back, we'll tell you all about May being customer appreciation month.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Phil, by the way, Al Pacino news, he has quit Despicable Me 2 in the middle of the recording of that animated film. He is, of course, famous for playing the bad guy, even when he's the good guy. I don't know what that means. I don't think that that's quite true. He has played bad guys, and he's played good guys, but in any event, he's still kind of the bad guy. He yells a lot. He makes crazy eyes. See, it's sad for people to just, all of a sudden, Al Pacino's this guy that yells a lot.
Well, Al does a lot of yelling, yes.
I remember him in Heat going, "She's got a great ass!"
Yes, that was him yelling.
He was yelling at Hank Azaria.
He's yelling at a guy that Hank Azaria was playing.
Yeah, he's yelling at the character.
Yes, I know. Thank you. So anyway, he makes crazy eyes. His hair always looks like he's been awake for 37 hours on an anger binge. He is gravel-voiced and intimidating, so he was the perfect choice to play a villain in a children's movie. Unfortunately, he's reportedly dropped out due to creative differences with the producers of Despicable Me 2, the highly anticipated sequel to the Steve Carell-led animated feature. What's most unfortunate is that he was halfway through the recording of his part, meaning the producers were left in the lurch. They issued a statement over the production of Despicable Me 2. There were creative differences between us and Al Pacino, who had been cast as the voice of Eduardo in the film. We have mutually decided with Al to replace the voice of Eduardo with a new actor. Universal and Illumination thank Al for his many contributions to the process, and we love you and need you. So there he goes.
Well, Al Pacino is acting royalty, and I think whoever these producers are need to take that into account, because Al Pacino, with the snap of his fingers, could have all of them eating out of a garbage can in the morning. And I'm not kidding.
I don't think that Al Pacino would do that.
And how do you know?
I don't. But more to the point, I don't think that Al Pacino, as great as he is, and he's one of the most revered of all American actors, maybe one of the most revered actors on the English-speaking stage in history, I don't think Al Pacino, with great respect, has that kind of juice anymore.
My God, so you're turning on him.
No, I'm just saying, Al Pacino's not going to call up a student. You know what I want him to close this, to close it down and yell it? Is that what you're saying? To just yell it?
Do that again.
I want you to close it down.
That sounds a little bit like him.
Yeah, it's not bad, Mr. Henry. Here's the Al Pacino impression that you want to do, okay?
Yeah, do yours, bud. It's really good. Listen to this, Phil.
Yeah. She's got a great ass! Or, wait a minute.
Yeah, that sucked, you know.
Well, now hold on. Because she's got a great ass!
You sound like someone who got it caught in one of those old-fashioned squeegees, you know?
What?
Like you feed the shirt. I can't go into it.
Oh, God.
Well?
Bud, just leave your Al Pacino impressions at the door, and let's get moving on with this show, because we do have with us on the line Dr. Jack Kepler, and Dr. Kepler is at UCLA, and he's going to talk to us about this creature that washed up on the shore of this New Zealand beach, washed up on the shore of New Zealand at this beach in, is that New Zealand, the Bay of Plenty, Dr. Kepler?
The Bay of Plenty is one of the areas that's known for the this kind of life, marine life. When you're talking about a killer whale, the Bay of Plenty is where the killer whale has spawned over time. And there's no doubt in my mind, I agree with the analysis done by, I think it was the doctor there from the Marine Institute in New Zealand. There's no doubt in my mind that it is, in fact, a killer whale or whatever the homo cetacean species.
And you say that, why?
You can't identify the animal by the, I think you heard one of you or the one of the other, the host or whoever I'm talking to, said the contour of the jaw.
Yes, that was me.
Okay, yeah, the contour of the jaw is the tip off, the size of the teeth, the tip off. It's got sort of a big body mass. You can take the length of the animal and divide that by the circumference. You're going to get a pretty good eyeball of what it is.
Dr. Kepler, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes.
Tell me, these animals, this is a killer whale, and obviously this is an animal that is a meat eater. It is a killer. How do you think this thing died? And I want you to comment on something I've heard people saying, that whales beach themselves. This is a prelude to some sort of evolutionary step, that these animals are looking to become land creatures again.
Well, I've heard the theory that it was put forth along those lines. The whale is going to eventually become a land animal again. The whale at one time was a land animal. We feel the whale is, given the fossilized remains we found, that whales had appendages that were very much for locomotion on dry land, much like the sea lions.
And sea lions were on dry land, too, at one time.
I'm answering a lady's question. If you could just give me a moment. And is you're the host of the show?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
And you're what? You're Pam?
Yes, I'm Margaret Gray.
All right. The whale, it was an animal that had a leg, and it would walk on one leg. Not one leg. I'm so sorry. I'm so very sorry.
No, that's all right.
The whale had two legs, and it pulled itself along, and then finally got tired of that, just went into the water. And those are the things that cause evolution.
All right. You're saying...
Hold on. I'm still talking to the lady. I'll be with you in a minute. So those are things that cause evolution, you know.
Yes, so but you said the whale was pulling itself along.
Yeah, as far as we know, the whale had, when it was a land animal, you see.
Yeah, is it a land animal, doctor, how long it was just pulling itself on two legs?
Yes, it had two legs and just decided it got, if you can imagine pulling yourself along, if you had no legs, you just had two arms, and you're laying on the ground and you're pulling yourself, you're going to go, well, I don't want to do this anymore. And you're going to say, well, I'm going to go back in the water, you know.
Well, it would be a lot easier.
I would think so.
Yeah, what's your name again?
I'm the host of the show, Doctor, okay? And I'm the guy that gets to say what he wants to say when he wants to say it.
I understand that. I just was trying to answer the lady's question.
Well, all right, and I think you've answered it.
I'm very sorry. What's your question?
Well, now, I don't have a question, because...
All right, well, if you allow me to finish.
Well, it's because, you know, somebody asked the question that I was going
to
ask.
I mean, if you don't mind, you know, I'd like to answer the lady. The lady asked me, did the animal get tired?
Well, I wanted to ask about that, too.
Well, take your place in line, because she...
Bill, I asked it first. I don't,
But I grow up and act like be more of a kid and quit being... Being an adult, I mean, be more of an adult and quit being more of a kid, you know?
I who are you, sir?
I'm Bud Dickman.
If you're all going to fight about it, just wanted to tell you...
Hold on, I'm the host of the show.
You're the host of the show, and this Dickman. All I'm saying is, if you have a question, I'd like you all to write it down, and I'll get to it, all right?
All right, let me write my question down.
In the meantime, I'm going to answer this lady's question. The whale was pulling itself along one day and said, there's got to be a better way. And another whale said, no, there isn't. And the whale said, well, how do you know? You're just a whale. He said, well, I mean, do you see anybody else around here who's going to tell us? He said, right over there, ocean. I go in there, I get to swim. So that's done, you know.
Hey, by the way, I've written my question down.
Okay. So want to tell me what it is?
Well, why would I write it down?
So you can remember what it is.
Oh, okay.
Well, hold on for a minute. I'm still answering this lady.
Doc, put him on hold. What's going on with this guy? Is he freaking brain dead or is he senile?
I don't know. I told the guy was gone.
The guy works in an ocean place.
Well, what does that mean, in an ocean place?
Yeah, that could mean he's got a saltwater swimming pool. Are you kidding me? That was pretty good.
No, it wasn't. No. What's going on with this guy?
I don't know. I had some questions about a whale.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back here with Dr. Jack Kepler from UCLA, a marine biologist, who is explaining to us this thing that washed up on the shore there in New Zealand in the Bay of Plenty. We know that this is a place where whales have spawned or do spawn. This time of year in the... I think this time of year is the fall. It is the fall months. Am I right about that? Yeah, it's the fall months of in New Zealand and in Australia. I don't know what that means, though.
Yeah, why did you bring that up? So what? They only have babies in...
Yeah, like October?
No, this would be May, bud. God. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
You wouldn't mean May. This is May, and you said fall.
The fall is in May, Phil, in New Zealand.
Well, that's not entirely correct, because I did a piece.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Right there.
Islanders pull even with Pegmans, yeah.
So that's probably, in terms of the environment...
That's not a story about the environment. That's a hockey game.
What a jackball, man.
No, no, it says penguin.
Yeah, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
What are you jackasses arguing about now?
He thinks this is something about the Islanders pull even with penguins.
Yeah, it's about the people who live on an island.
No, you moron. The Islanders are the New York Islanders, a hockey team.
Oh.
Man, you know about hockey?
Nobody in America likes hockey.
Oh, okay. Well, you tell the people in, you know, like Pittsburgh and New York.
Well, not, well, yeah, okay, there, but I mean the regular America.
How dare, I will not sit still for that.
Hold on for a minute. What do you mean regular America?
You know, we're right, not places like that.
So in other words, any place that likes hockey is not regular America.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that at all. And you're putting, you're stuffing it in my mouth. You know,
he's stuffing it in his mouth.
What do you mean stuffing it in your mouth?
Well, what are you doing to him?
I'm not doing anything. He said I'm stuffing it in it. What do you mean?
You know, you're putting a word in there.
No, I'm not putting words in your, if that's what you mean, words in your mouth.
I don't know. No.
Hey, bud, do you want me to smack you so hard you start to cry?
There's no word in my mouth.
I'm not trying to put words into your mouth. That's the phrase. Don't put words in my mouth. You don't say, quit trying to stuff it in my mouth.
I notice how you laugh at the filthiest things.
It is pretty funny, though.
It is. I got it. But all I'm trying to tell you is the New York Islanders are a hockey team. The Pittsburgh Penguins are a hockey team. They're playing a hockey game, dude. It's got nothing to do with people living on an island dealing with penguins. Okay? Maybe someday we will see a story that says Islanders... are pulling even with penguins.
Why would it say that?
I don't know. Maybe the penguins are eating up the food supply and the Islanders are finally growing their own, and so the Islanders pull even with the penguins in terms of food supply. Have you thought about that?
That's asinine.
Yeah, I don't tell you, that sounds way out there.
Yeah, that sounds way out there, man. But when I say it's a hockey game between the Islanders and the Penguins, you cats don't get it either, so where do you want me to go with this? Anyway, we are in the air here with Jack Kepler. Dr. Kepler is a marine biologist from UCLA. Now, Dr. Kepler, you had a chart you wanted me to show people?
Well, that's right. We put up a chart there, Phil.
All right, now we're looking right here, folks, on Phil TV, a chart of whales.
The top whale is a blue whale. 90 foot long is a blue whale.
That's a very big whale, isn't it, Doctor?
It's a very big whale, and it's getting bigger. We think it's getting larger and larger as the years pass. We feel the blue whale at some point is going to surpass the length of most any yacht. I don't know how big yachts are. Do they give them a big ship and thing like that?
Well, I mean, you mean a yacht or just a ship?
What are the big yachts that people take on a cruise?
Those are cruise ships. Those are not yachts.
All right, well, okay, that's right. I had a friend of mine who was Bob, the guy that invented the bobblehead doll. He had a big yacht that looked like a cruise ship. In any event, these animals are getting bigger every year. Some of them are going to get so big you can't think of it without losing your mind. And that's what we're worried about in marine biology.
Well, what do you mean can't think about it without losing your mind?
Well, the size of the animal alone boggles the imagination, and the mind comes apart. Your mind comes apart, and we don't want it. Now, underneath that, Phil and Dickman and whoever, and the lady there, Ms.
Margaret Gray.
Margaret Gray. Underneath that is called a robot. I got to get my glasses. I think it's called a robot whale. No, it's a finback. That's right.
What do you mean robot?
Is that someone talking again?
He asked, what do you mean robot?
I misread. It's Finback.
But is there a robot whale?
Not that I know of, no.
Then why would you say that?
Because that's what I thought it said. I didn't have my glasses on. In other words, I thought maybe they'd invented or not invented, but they found a robot. They got a robot whale in custody. I used to be a police officer, so I gave up the police department to work in oceanography.
So you're using a lot of the same terms.
Yeah, I am, and I apologize for that. So the whale was arrested. The whale was put into the zoo, and I thought it was a robot, and it was in fact a real whale, and that's why it's called a finback and not a robot whale. If they ever do find a whale that is only mechanical.
Well, what is a whale? You know, Doctor, this is beginning to get a little weird. You know what I mean? It's getting weird, Doctor. What's the likelihood they're going to find a robot whale?
Mr. Henry?
Yes?
Hi, this is Denise Kepler. I'm Dr. Kepler's daughter.
How are you, dear?
I'm fine. My father's tired now, and we're going to put him to bed. I'm awfully sorry.
Okay, I didn't know that forgive me. Where is he? Is he at your home?
No, he's at the senior center. He's been here we've had him here for about 6 months. He's very lucid, and there are times when he is not so, and that's what's happening right now. I'm so sorry that you didn't get a chance. And if you want me to, doctor, my father, I call him doctor.
No, please don't. Did he fall asleep?
He did. Your last question, probably. Dad, hey, Dad.
Yeah, that's, get away from me, huh?
Hold on, he's talking in his sleep. Daddy, honey, it's Denise, Daddy.
Hey. Yeah, hey.
Oh, he's having a nightmare.
Well, don't disturb him, okay?
Well, I might have to wake him up because he does take a pill here in the middle of the night.
Where are you?
Well, we're in the cafeteria, and he's dead out. My husband's going to come over here. Darren, honey. Darren, get a fork or something. Uh-huh. Daddy?
He sounds like he's out.
Yeah, Daddy, he sounds like he's sleeping. Well, you want to bother him?
I have to give him this mess. Daddy?
Get away. No, get it off of me.
He's having a dream again about the jellyfish. My father was part of an expedition that had been off the coast of South America. This was around 1961, when their craft was attacked by what at that time was thought to be a mutated squid. I don't know if you read the news article.
No, I did not.
Well, the squid was very, very mutated to the size of one of the tentacles reached well over 300 feet.
Oh, my God!
What are you talking about?
Ma'am, I'm sure you heard of the SS Dorsal. Did you hear of the Dorsal? It was an oceanographic vessel?
No, ma'am, I didn't.
It was attacked by a squid. My father was the only survivor. All the other men and women on board, all hands lost.
My God, that's horrible. Are you telling me this is like out of a science fiction movie?
It really is. And my father, every now and again, watch this. Daddy. They're having calamari for lunch.
Hey!
Don't do that to him!
Why would you do that?
Oh, come on. He's all right. He's my daddy, and I would never hurt my daddy. But we, every now and again, when people come over and he falls asleep, if people come to visit the famous Dr. Kepler and he's not awake, what do you expect?
Don't torture the man! You're bringing all these subconscious thoughts of his coming up. I mean, my God, I didn't even know about that. I've seen science fiction movies.
Well, they're based on, a lot of them are based on the SS Dorsal, the oceanographic. It was a scientific vessel out of Miami, and all hands lost. This is October 6th of 1961.
Well, that is about as horrible a thing as I've ever heard. A gigantic squid.
A gigantic octopi, or octopoon, or squid.
Now, what is an octopoon?
That's the plural of squid.
I thought the plural of squid was squee.
Yeah, was that squee?
No, squy is what you mean.
How about squids? Just an S on the end? Hello?
Yeah. So anyway,
Yeah, just take it easy, Phil. Yeah, I thought it was squy.
Yeah, no, it's squee, a plural, but it's also octopoon. Watch this. This is a good one here. Daddy, it's an octopus off the forward bow.
Hey, get out! Yeah!
How about that?
What do you mean off the forward bow? What other kind of bow is there? All right, while you torture your father, do you mind if I take a break?
What do you need to do, pinch one off?
You know something, Ms. Kepler? You are not representing your family very well at all. Your father, who has been most gracious with us, the poor man is elderly, he's fallen asleep.
Tell me something I don't know, Mr. Henry. I'm his daughter.
Okay, and you're sitting there torturing him.
I'm not sitting here, I'm standing over him. Sitting there, it bothers me. It burns when people say things like that are grammatically incorrect. It burns almost as if I've got, you know, well.
Did you have chlamydia at one time? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I know that.
That's great. That's just great. All right.
Don't get on your. Oh wait, my father's waking up. Daddy, hi. The radio.
Then that's what the killer whale will do if you don't if you plug it in.
Okay, Dr. Kepler, thank you very much. That was very informative.
Oh, you're most welcome. And any time you want to come over.
And you're over there at the senior center. Maybe we can have lunch.
Oh yeah, oh sure. They have a cookie. They have a cookie on Tuesday. They give you a cookie. And we had Jell-O. When we had the Jell-O thing.
Darren, when did they have Jell-O?
GD time. Now they have Jell-O too.
Well, that's great. Can I come over and have Jell-O with you?
Yes. I mean, don't you have anything better to do? Come over and eat Jell-O with me?
My father is so sarcastic. Daddy, don't do that. Come on.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my daughter. I thought it was. I squeezed my own daughter's ass. I'm sorry, darling.
Well, that's all right. You don't recognize. No. Anyway, Mr. Henry, we thank you, and I'm so sorry that my father couldn't stay awake. Daddy, say goodbye.
Yeah, yeah.
Daddy, say goodbye. The octopus is attacking.
Yeah. Ah, Eddie! Eddie! Eddie's dead.
You know what? You're sadistic, and I don't want to have anything more to do with you, okay? And my regards to the good doctor, and I hope he survives his stay there at the home.
Oh, what a pain in the ass.
Phil, you were a little bit judgmental.
Don't give me judgmental. Did you hear her? She's Daddy, the octopus is attacking.
Yeah, but a giant octopi.
And will you knock it off with octopi? The plural of octopus, well, it is octopi, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, octopi. But it ain't octopoon, which is what she was saying.
That was the plural of squid.
Yeah, that's the plural of squid.
Well, the plural of squid is squids. Not octopoon.
You just don't like the term octopoon because it brings up, well, memories of a happier time.
We'll be right back, folks. 877-876-PHIL. Does it now?
I would think it would.
We'll be right back, and we've got more to tell you about not only this gigantic, freaking, ugly-ass thing. Leonard Nimoy is in a very famous commercial. Megyn Kelly of Fox News is in the news. And more on those three young ladies that were discovered having been abducted for so many years in Cleveland. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
No, get it away. I don't want calamari, no.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We thank Dr. Kepler for joining us and for regaling us as he did on the topic of cetaceans, killer whales, and so forth. Now, before we move forward with anything else on the program, I do want to mention that a reigning legend in motion pictures, someone whose work we're all familiar with, even if we don't know the name, has passed on, Ray Harryhausen, who was the visual effects guy behind such films as, The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, when you saw that...
The Medusa, yes.
Yeah, the Medusa and the Kraken, and he was also, I think that was the Kraken was in Jason and the Argonauts.
What's the Kraken?
It's like a big creature.
Yeah, but doesn't that have anything to do with a Kraken?
It ain't about crack cocaine. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
No. It was a mythic creature from Greek lore, and Ray Harryhausen, 92 years of age. He died Tuesday in London. It was announced on the Facebook page that the foundation, Ray and Diana Harryhausen Foundation, runs. But Ray Harryhausen, I don't know that there's an area of film he didn't influence. And, of course, George Lucas weighed in on the passing of Ray Harryhausen. He said, Ray has been a great inspiration to us all in special visual effects. The art of his earlier films, which most of us grew up on, inspired us so much. Without Ray Harryhausen, there would likely have never been a Star Wars. No question about that. The first time I saw one of his movies was Earth versus the Flying Saucers. I got to tell you, I was probably about 9 years old. This thing came on TV. And it was the most amazing movie I'd ever seen. I had never seen anything like it. I mean, I'd seen King Kong, but I hadn't seen a modern contemporary look at what it would look like if flying saucers attacked Washington. Because what he did was he built models of the Capitol building, he built models of the Washington Monument, and he had these flying saucers crashing into them. And it was very realistic for a 9-year-old kid to see this. I don't know exactly how it affected adults, but I think everybody saw it as that kind of animation was just amazing. He also did a film called 20 Million Miles to Earth.
That's the one with a creature. I didn't think that was that good.
Well, Bud, in the context of the time, it was damn good. 20 Million Miles to Earth.
Was that the one with the Italians?
Yeah, it was a spaceship that lands. It's actually an Earth ship.
No, it ain't. It comes from Venus.
It's an Earth ship that comes from... Am I going to start to have to hassle this?
Phil, if you know how to handle people, you know, this is a panel show. So you have to be the moderator. I don't hear other moderators going, I'm going to kick your ass if you don't shut up.
Maybe they ought to. Maybe it'd be more entertaining, you know.
I don't think Sean Hannity needs advice from you. Thank you very much. And I don't hear Sean Hannity saying, would you shut up before I belt you?
Like I said, I stick by my original statement. His show might be better if he did that.
Yeah, sure, Sean Hannity, he'd probably get his ass kicked.
Maybe. But I don't want to talk about that right now. I'm just saying, do you mind if I just say what I want to say here, Bud? First of all, 20 Million Miles to Earth was about an Earth ship that visits Venus and picks up some creature by mistake.
What, is it like a cab?
That's a cab!
No, it ain't a cab.
What do you mean picked it up?
The creature got on board somehow.
Yes, I remember it was a very small creature. By the time it got to Earth, it was huge.
Yeah, by the time it got to Earth, it was big enough to kill a couple of the... I think it might have killed the entire crew. And a very famous still from 20 Million Miles to Earth, if you've seen it, shows the spaceship, the Earth ship, nose first into the Aegean Sea or one of the seas near, you know, around Italy.
Well, that could be the Aegean. It could be the Mediterranean.
Whatever, okay?
Sorry.
So you see the ass end of this thing sticking out of the water, and that was 20 Million Miles to Earth. But Ray Harryhausen, did the special effects there, and it was mostly this creature that grew from being about the size of a little tiny bird, it was literally in a bird cage, to this enormous thing that was, you know, towering over everyone and you know, creating the mayhem that giant monsters create that we love for them to create. And so that was I thought that was a great movie. But Earth versus the Flying Saucers was something else, man. You know?
I thought the only thing wrong with Earth versus the Flying Saucers was when the general got an X-ray beam and you could see the inside of his head. I thought that was cheap.
That's not Ray Harryhausen, though.
Didn't you say he did the visual effects?
Oh, yeah. I remember all you could see was, like, just the skull. It looked dumb.
That wasn't Ray Harryhausen. Well, maybe it was Ray Harryhausen because there was a part of that film where... You literally were looking. It wasn't an X-ray?
No, it was not an X-ray. It was as if they took a piece of his head away, and inside...
was nothing.
I'm going to kick your...
Hey! Watch it.
I swear to God, keep him away from me. Was inside was his brain, which if they opened up your skull, Bud, and by the way, I'd be happy to do the honors, they would find nothing.
Then they wouldn't find nothing.
That's exactly what I just said.
No, you didn't.
All right, just So 20 Million Miles to Earth was another one. In 1992, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences presented Harryhausen with an honorary Oscar, a tribute to his visual magic. He was presented with the Gordon E. Sawyer Award, an Oscar statuette given to an individual whose technological contributions have brought credit to the industry. We weren't able to give it to you for any single movie, Mr. Harryhausen, because, of course, we don't want to give an Academy Award to a real piece of schlock like Earth versus the Flying Saucers, even if the best part of that movie were your special effects, but we'll just give you one for all your movies.
So that's what you think Hollywood thinks of Ray Harryhausen?
I think Hollywood could very easily give out, they could have given Ray Harryhausen an Academy Award. But in those days, the science fiction movie was not respected the way that it is today. The science fiction and the horror films in those days, I don't think, had the respect of the so-called elite of Hollywood. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. We will update you on the story of those three women found alive in Cleveland. The Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Ray Harryhausen. Was the name of him? Ray Harryhausen. Don't mess with his name. I didn't name the guy.
Phil Hendry. Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Hour 2 here this Tuesday night. Tomorrow, Bobby Dooley walks into the studio to do another the Bobby Dooley podcast, and Bobby will be interviewing the great comic and podcasting pioneer, internet radio pioneer, Jimmy Pardo. Jimmy is hysterically funny. He's got a fantastic podcast slash radio internet radio show that he does once a week, and he's one of the few guys that I've met who does sort of what we do on our show. He has premium content. He's got a subscription model. It's worked very, very well for him down through the years. So Bobby is going to be talking with him about that and more, and that'll be dropping on Friday. We've got Rick Overton, who is an amazing voice artist, does hundreds and hundreds of different kinds of characters. He will be visiting with Bobby as well. And then we know that we have John Ratzenberger in the offing as soon as John comes back from his travels abroad. And when I say abroad...
would you please clean that up?
It's his travels back east. John's back east right now. He will be with Bobby Dooley very, very shortly. All right. Before we move into the area here actually, we do want to talk with Doug Danger about Jason Collins, who became the first openly homosexual athlete in a major American sport last week when we were on vacation. So we have not had an opportunity to bring on some of the people that will comment on things like that. Doug Danger, who is a gay man and a gay journalist, self-described. I know he hates being brought on to talk about gay topics, but I was told by David G. Hall, who is our, you know, the guy who runs the syndication arm of our show, that we had to have on Doug Danger because he's the gay guy and, you know.
Well, you know that Doug is going to resent that because that is such a stereotype.
Yeah, well, just because he's gay.
Well, it makes sense, doesn't it?
No, yeah, but he always said he don't want to be brought on. He don't want to be seen as a gay man.
Well, then why does he call himself a gay man and a gay journalist if he doesn't want to be seen as a gay man?
He doesn't mind talking about the political aspects of the gay, but he will not. Let me underline that word. Will not, N-O-T. It's a small word, Phil, but it means...
All right, I understand, Margaret. Would you get to it?
I'm just saying he will not comment on anything sexual.
I don't think there has to be anything sexual. It's about social. It's about socializing. It's about civil rights, human rights. That's what it's about. So we'll have Doug Danger on in just a moment. But first, a daughter was found with the three missing women... women missing for a decade. There was a child that one of these women had. This becomes a story that I want to just, you want to kill somebody, don't you? You not only have kidnapped and brutalized and raped and tortured three women, now a baby is born, and that child becomes a captive, and that child becomes, to the extent that you can do it, that child becomes warped, although... there's a photograph that was published today showing the mother And I believe it was this young lady, Amanda Berry, with this child, and she looks like somebody who took care of that child very well and was a good mother. But this child found in Cleveland with the three women who have been missing for a decade is the daughter of one of them. The women who vanished in separate cases near their homes in Cleveland were found Monday, only miles from where they disappeared, and three brothers have been arrested in connection to the incident. These three brothers, by the way, they had their mugshots here momentarily, and man, are they ugly. God, these guys are the ugliest bastards you've ever seen. And talk about filthy. Why don't you get a bath, get these guys, scrub them up or something, give them a shower before you stick their ugly faces on TV. Where is that mugshot, man?
I don't know. Here's the story.
Well, here is the story. We're going to show it to our friends there on Phil TV. But the point that I'm making here is that whenever they pick these guys up, and I don't know when it was, they must have just gotten done, I don't know, licking a trench with their tongues or something, you know.
Yeah, man, they look dirty.
They look filthy. Maybe they're construction workers. I don't know. It's possible that they do some sort of manual labor or labor in a very dirty environment. But they didn't look happy, man. And that's okay with me. They looked very unhappy, and they looked filthy, and they looked for all the world like the dirty, filthy, despicable, grubby pieces of garbage that they are. And I said this, you know, I said this last night.
You're not going to talk. Oh, God, don't do it, Phil.
Hold on for a minute. I think it's my duty to say what I perceive as a social commentator. Thank you.
Tell him, Mr. Henry, that's your right I was going to say as a gay man, but...
Yeah, that's...
Easy, okay?
You're not back as a gay man.
He didn't say that. You didn't mean to say that.
No, I was going to say it's Doug Danger, right?
What I'm saying is that these stories, whether they are gunmen, whether they're this kind of abduction, these completely unacceptable stories of violence and physical assault and abduction are coming so fast and furious because of the informational speed that we have a hard time reacting to them. And in fact, I think we're getting overloaded. And I'm just going to tell you this right now. One of these days, there's going to be a crowd of people gathered around as they take these scum out of the van to lead them into the jailhouse. And we're going to see another, you know, Jack Ruby or something.
I think that was very irresponsible of you because you're going to encourage a nut to go out and do it.
Am I supposed to not say that because it might encourage... What if it encourages people to take extra steps to protect these prisoners as they're transporting them, you know?
Well, but what about the nut?
What about the cops that are encouraged to take extra steps?
Yeah, you're going to cost people money. Well, a nut doesn't cost nobody money.
Yeah, the nut does. The nut's going to go out and kill somebody, which is going to cost us... People think that it's going to save us the money of having to put on a trial. That's going to cost us all kinds of money in terms of investigating the nut that killed the guy.
Which is the nut, the guy or the guy that killed the nut? I forget.
Yeah.
I don't know, but they're both nuts, all right? I'm just telling you that we saw a lady do that already in one of these trials. Some woman walked up to some guy in a trial, and she blew his freaking head off. You remember that, right?
That's that lady with that child molester.
I remember that, yes. That was complete... That, I feel for that woman. What an irresponsible thing to do.
All right, I agree with you, but I'm just telling you, the human condition, we're just getting really tired of seeing this stuff. We really are. We're getting tired of seeing it. We're tired of smelling it. We're tired of looking at dead body. We're tired of looking at the smoke and the carnage and the mayhem and the searching, you know. And
do you say that justifies what happened to that one bomber in Boston?
What are you talking about?
Well, they killed the one young man, a young man. Who had yet to be... Did you see the young man they killed?
Yeah, I saw the piece of garbage they killed. A good riddance to bad rubbish. And not only did they shoot his ass down, but then his brother ran him over. I think that that's one for the Twit Olympics.
That's despicable.
No. What do you mean despicable? Not only did this jackass get shot by the cops, but for good measure, then his brother runs him over. Good one. Hey! You're not going to get me to feel any kind of sympathy for this scum. You know, all I got to do is think about that little boy. All I got to do is think about those two beautiful girls. All I got to do is think about that poor man in that wheelchair with his legs gone. Did you see that?
Excuse me, please.
Yeah, look, she's going to throw up.
God, man, you can't take it. Shut up.
Yeah, see? You sound like Roland Schwinn.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Bud, make sure there's paper towels in there.
You're going to puke.
Moving on in this story here, Gina DeJesus, Amanda Berry, and Michelle Knight were released from Metro Health Medical Center this morning. A hospital spokeswoman did then say, I've been kidnapped, I've been missing for 10 years, Berry told a 911 operator after breaking free, and I'm here, I'm free now. God, after breaking free. The child was also carried out of the home, but the child's identity or age has not been released by police. The child is Berry's daughter, according to ABC News' affiliate WEWS Television. Police confirmed to WEWS that one of the men taken into custody is 52-year-old Ariel Castro. This was the guy that she was talking about in the 911 call. A background check shows he owns the home where the three women were living. Authorities believe Castro, who was once a city school bus driver, was keeping the women locked inside his modest two-story home, which he has owned since 1992. Police have not identified his brothers, who are ages 50 and 54. Charges could come as early as today. She identified Ariel Castro by name in her 911 call. The dispatcher pressed for information like what he's wearing. And this girl, I remember she was very frantic. She said, I don't know. He's not here right now. That's why I ran away. She sounded like she was not really interested in giving a fashion show, you know.
Well, they wanted to know to identify him.
Yeah, but this girl is fighting for her life, okay? I'm not saying the 911 operator did anything wrong. I'm just saying we'll give you the details on his fine men's apparel at a future date. I got to get my ass out of here. Send a cop. All right, we'll be right back. It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Doug Danger coming up next. And we'll talk with him about Jason Collins, the first openly gay athlete in a major American sport, right after these messages.
Truth is our bitch.
I just think you're filthy-minded. Show.
I want that woman.
I said to stop that, Phil.
Keep doing it, Mr. Henry.
No, I'll stop. I was pretending like I was some hillbilly that abducted some woman and had her in a cellar. Because we were talking about if this is going on and the news. You see, it isn't true, folks, as much as some people would like you to believe it's true, that all of a sudden people started abducting women and hiding them in houses. Oh, boy, I remember when I was a kid, they never did that. Really? Well, yes, they did. You just didn't hear about it because we didn't have near the investigative, we didn't have the consciousness of these things. And if we did, there was a lot more stuff that was pressing, you know. I mean, you think about it, folks. Do you realize that it's only been in the last 3 years, that they have finally identified all of the victims of what was up until that point one of the most devastating commercial occupational disasters this country had ever seen. It was a fire at a place called the Triangle Shirtwaist Company in New York City. And it happened at the turn of the century. And a fire broke out in a place where there were mostly immigrant women working. It was just the reality. They needed a job. They got off the boat. These guys that ran these factories hired them. You get paid whatever garbage can money they paid them. You can take a break and have your lunch, get your ass back in here because we got to get this stuff done. There wasn't anything called OSHA back in those days. And these women were essentially in this building. The back door had been chained shut because a lot of these gals would go outside and take a cigarette break. And the owners didn't want them doing that. They wanted them on the job. So they chained this door shut. Well, that's what sentenced most of these women to their deaths because there was no way out. Some women busted out the windows and jumped out. Some women climbed to the roof of the building only to have to jump. The cops and the responding fire brigades didn't have near the kinds of rescue equipment that they have today. Many of these police officers were traumatized for the rest of their lives as they saw person after person jumping from this building to their death. Many of the bodies that they pulled out of there, most of the bodies they pulled out of there, burnt beyond recognition. They didn't know who they were. And in those days, the point that I'm trying to make is, in those days, they didn't have time to identify everything. There's a million things going on. There's a million things going wrong, you know, where they were learning their own kind of lessons in those days. And one of the things was the tenements were filthy. And now there's this fire. We got to have occupational standards. And, there's a war with Spain and whatever the hell. And the last thing that anybody was concerned with in those days was identifying every dead body that you saw. Some, just like there was a time when an unsolved murder was just the way it was. And more, we don't accept that now. Cops don't accept that anymore. They have cold case files. We have a shared database. We've got a forensics. We have, in other words, we have the assets and we have the tools now to solve these crimes, and they're not going to let them go anymore. There was a time, though, when, well, it just wasn't solved. The murder went, yeah, it just, well, that's the way it is. And there was a time we just, who is she? We don't know. Somebody's dead. We don't know. Well, they didn't let this one go, and they just now, in the last 3 years, identified the final three women from that fire.
Dead? What, like the ancestors?
I don't know. I don't know if they have any family or what the story was, but they finally got their names. They were all immigrants. These women, I think, that they identified were Russian. So, you know, we have a time and a place that we live in today where we can go after these problems a little more aggressively. We have the tools. We have the ability to get places faster, to get information faster, to disseminate information faster. We've got DNA. We have ways of identifying people, ways of not just identifying people, but the cars they drive. We have ways of identifying the clothes they wear. We have ways of figuring things out. But with all of that information comes a little bit of an information overload. And when you hear about three women that are abducted and held for 10, you're like, what the hell is that, man? Can you imagine? This has been going on since the beginning of time. Can you imagine what this must have been like back in the day, you know?
Well, that's why I don't like you doing the hillbilly.
I'm just saying, if I was a hillbilly with a woman locked in the cellar...
Phil, would you stop?
I would do.
Yeah, that woman down there is mine. You can't go near her. Mr. Henry's doing a billy voice. Mr. Henry's doing a owl.
I told you.
Don't reach over and hit him. I'm the guy that hits.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's pretty whack, man. So this guy Ramsey, the next door neighbor, this is the guy that everyone's imagination is captured by. And why not? He's just this interesting chap that was living next door. He was eating McDonald's. He hears this girl screaming. He sees a girl, and he says she's going nuts. She's waving out through the crack of this door. And he says, if you're stuck, just open the door. She says, I can't. It's locked. So that's all he needed to hear. So he and the girl tried to pry it open. They couldn't do it. So he got his neighbor, and they kicked open the bottom of the door. He said it was cheap aluminum. She climbed out with her daughter. She went to my house, and we called 911. This guy, Mr. Ramsey, has been, you know, feted across the media landscape as the guy that saved them. He said they looked like they hadn't been fed for a long time. They were skinny when they came out of that house. The victims went to a hospital and were being examined. He said he barbecued with the home's owner. He never suspected anything was amiss. There was nothing exciting about him, he said, of course, well, until today. He said he was shocked when police told him who he had rescued. He said, do you know who you just rescued out of the house? I said, brother, a couple of females. He said, no. You got Amanda, you got Gina. These are the girls that have been missing. The saga began as three separate cases in August of 2002, when Knight, then in her 20s, was last seen by her cousin's house. Barry disappeared at age 16 on April 21st, 2003, the day before her 17th birthday. She'd called her sister to say she was getting a ride home from her job at Burger King. And then finally, on April the 2nd, 2002, almost a full year later, DeJesus, who was 14 at the time, she disappeared on her way home from school. The cases have consumed the Cleveland community for years. They gained national attention and were profiled on the Montel Williams Show and the Oprah Winfrey Show. The missing persons posters have been a part of the community for a decade by families who've refused to give up. Overnight, countless family members, friends, and even elated strangers cheered outside of the Metro Medical Center. You know, man, no wonder people don't give up.
Yeah, well, I mean, most of the people are going to be dead.
Oh, okay, well, thanks a lot, Dick Tracy.
Who's he?
A detective.
Well, I think that you know, if you lose a child, I think it stands to reason that the kid, and this is Frank, not me, these are his words, if you lose a child, within a few hours, the kid's...
Yeah, probably in a plastic bag.
In a plastic bag.
Well, isn't that a nice thought?
Phil, we have to be realistic.
All right, let's be realistic for a second. Jason J. Delmonico.
No, no, you're not bringing up my son. No, he's, no.
Yeah, no, 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 yes, I am. Yes, I am going to bring up your son. Jason J. Delmonico.
I said no, you will not bring up my son.
Why not?
Why not?
Because he's a special boy. And he's not... See, here's what you don't understand. My son's not going to get abducted.
Yeah, really? Why not?
And would you not ask me why not, please?
Why not?
Would you tell him not to do that?
No, I will not tell him not to do that. We want to know why not.
Don't ask... I told you my son...
Ms. Ray, that toilet's backed up.
I don't care. I'll use it and I'll let it run all over the floor.
Oh, boy, what a chicken.
No, I'm not.
You don't want to, you know why you don't want to talk about that, Margaret? Because you don't want to face the possibility and the reality of it. You had better do both.
Don't tell me what to do, or I swear to God I'll go again and I'll really let this thing overflow.
What a baby. Get in there, bud.
I don't want to clean it up. It's going to make it overflow and everything.
Ah, quit crying, man. Go get a mop and do your job like a man.
Yeah, go on.
Probably had cheese, too.
Shut up. Wow, that's whack. So, there you go, folks. Hey, you don't know who's living next door to you. I remember when I was a kid. Well, I tell you what, let's get Doug Danger on the line here. Are we all out of time? All right. Next segment, we're going to have Doug Danger talking about Jason Collins. But we had a family that lived down the street from us. And the name of the family was Sepulveda. Now, if you know the city of Los Angeles, you know that we have a street called Sepulveda. That's because there was a family named Sepulveda, very early settlers in this area. And this family at the end of the street was a part of that family. And man, wow, they were way out there.
What'd they do?
They were kooky. They were kooky. I walked by that house one day, and I saw the older son creeping through the bush. It creeped me out, man. I just picked up a rock and threw it at him and said, get out of there. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show with Doug Danger.
I hope the Sepulvedas sue you. Oh, they sue you.
Yeah.
Phil Hendry.
Here the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And we've got Doug Danger on the line here. We will be speaking with Doug momentarily about Jason Collins and just the and also the story here. It's not only Jason Collins, but there's also a story here. And I got Dan. Excuse me for a moment, folks. I'm sorry. But what we've got is a audio situation here where the bloody audio from some of these clips shows up. And is that Dan Patrick?
Oh, God, get that off of there.
Take it easy, I will. Dang it. All right, so anyway, let's get Doug Danger on the line here. I'm sorry, Doug, to keep you waiting. I was trying to show my audience on Phil TV, I was trying to show them the story, the Barkley story, but it came accompanied with Dan Patrick.
Dan Patrick, I heard you sort of disrespect Dan Patrick a little bit. I just want to say I like Dan Patrick a lot, Phil, and I think I know you're a big Jim Rome fan and you're a big Scott Farrell fan, and, man, I can't feature that. I'm into professionalism. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, all right? We're talking, you wanted me to come out and talk about gay, I'll go full bore. I'll go all the way to the gay wall on it, you know? And
But, Doug, first of all, I would like my audience to understand.
Hold on. Please don't take that tired, worn out tone with me, Phil. I'm coming on the program. You want me to go down gay highway? I'll go down gay highway and I'll get off on, I'll get off the gay off ramp and I'll go into the gay section.
Well, Doug, we appreciate that. But Phil, I think he wants to say that you're a little defensive. We don't mean to attack you.
Well, Phil is going to say that, I shouldn't talk about being gay. I have traveled the gay road. No one knows Gay Street like I do.
Okay, can I ask something right now?
Whoa, there, sunshine. Hold on, man. Not even done. I'm not even out of the gay gate. See, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, one of the things that I've done here over the last, say, 2 years is I'm working into my writing and I'm working into the lexicon of what it's meant for me to come out of the closet. Now, you're talking about some guy that plays in the National Basketball Association. He came out of the closet. Well, let me just stop the world. Let me off. I'm just all so blown away by that, you know?
Yeah, blown.
You know, I'm going to come down there, and I swear to God, I will kill him. I don't care if I go to prison. I will kill him.
Bud, shut up, okay?
I didn't do anything wrong.
According to me, according to my gay justice.
You're talking about gay street and gay justice. You don't have your own country.
I've got my own opinion, Mr. Dickman, okay? And my opinion is the gay Republic of Doug. Do you understand?
Yeah, but you can't treat everybody as if we're all subjects to your regal authority.
No, I'm not saying that. But I'm telling you, have you been down Gay Street?
What are you talking about, Gay Street? Are you saying, am I gay? No, I'm not gay.
No, I'm not. I didn't ask you that, did I, man? I'm asking you.
Hold on, Doug. I want to know something. Are you defensive tonight, or do you not want to be on the air with me?
I want to be on the air. I want to talk about Jason Collins. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. Who else are you going to get?
You said you don't really like doing gay topics.
I never said that. I said I don't like, I won't talk about gay sex because that's what the straight people get their kicks hearing about. See, a lot of these straight guys especially, they say they don't like gays, they don't want to go down Gay Boulevard, but boy, I tell you what, if you gave them a free ride down to Gay Street, man, they'd be walking up and down the lanes of Gay Village.
What is it with Gay Street and Gay Village?
Yeah, I thought it was one of the same thing. What, this is a new way of talking?
What?
What are you talking about, Gay Street and Gay Village and Gay Boulevard, and have you been down?
Well, there you go again. See, what you want to do is laugh it off. You want to laugh the gay experience off, Phil. That's fine. But I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. I don't laugh it off. I swim in it. Or as the sheriff in Raging Bull said to Jake LaMotta, live in it, son. Live in it.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people have been quoting that film, including Margaret. Margaret, haven't you?
Yes, I like that. I say that too. Live in it, son. Live in it. What it means is, this is my opinion. This is my... These are the clothes I wear. Yes, this even sometimes is my body odor.
Oh, God.
Shut up. Yes, sometimes I have a... There's a smell to me. Live in it, son.
Margaret's laughing.
No, she isn't. She's caught. You all right?
I'm fine. I was gagging up.
Why?
I was thinking about Frank, okay?
That good or bad?
That's none of your business, you turd. You turd in a suit.
Look, Phil, I don't want to be on the air if you're going to have fist fights and all that.
Okay, I would like you to be on the air, but I'd like you to answer my questions. Is that too much to ask?
No, that's not too much to ask.
All right. Doug Danger is with us here as we talk about Jason Collins. Let's talk about this kid, Jason Collins, and also Charles Barkley weighing in. Jason Collins became the first openly homosexual athlete in major American team sports when he wrote an account in Sports Illustrated describing his experience as a gay player in the NBA. The 12-year veteran contacted the magazine because he wanted to use their forum as the platform to tell the world his story. On April 29th, Dan Patrick broke the story of Collins coming out, and it immediately rose to the top of the sports news cycle. The response to Collins' decision has been overwhelmingly positive, but the concept of playing with a gay player is still a major talking point across the world of sports. Former NBA star Charles Barkley joined the Dan Patrick Show and talked about Collins' decision to come out, telling Patrick about his experience with gay players in the locker room. That was what we were trying to listen to, right?
Well, yeah, that was the piece of that interview, but, look, Charles Barkley is not the guy to go to if you want to talk about gay man, gay experience. He was talking about everyone who has played in the NBA has had a gay teammate at some point. I don't think that takes any imagination. I think if you're an American and you don't believe that gay people have been in every single walk of life, and some of these walks of life people just cannot accept. I've talked to straight guys that refuse to believe that there have been gay soldiers. Well, I hate to break the news to you there, Bubba. They've not only been gay soldiers, there have been gay soldiers that have won medals. There have been gay soldiers that have saved the lives of straight people. There's and there have been gay doctors, and there's gay football players.
What about lacrosse?
Don't start pissing me off, man.
What do you mean lacrosse?
I don't know.
But, I won't be able to hold the crowd back. You're going to get mobbed, and you're going to get lynched, okay?
What do you mean?
That's a good point. Lynch, bud. meaning we're going to string you up, hang you from a tree.
All right, let's not get too ugly.
God, what is up with you people? You realize that's an ugly stereotype? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist.
Yeah, and what?
That, period. That's an ugly stereotype. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. It's the way I sign off.
All right, we're talking with Doug Danger here. Let's get to the point, can we? That would be nice.
Yeah, for once tonight, it would be nice.
All right, we're going to get to the point here on this particular segment with Doug Danger. We're talking about Jason Collins, who has come out as a... I want to ask you, Doug, for the gay athlete who is not out, and if there hadn't been yet a Jason Collins, what is it like? Do you perceive, just speaking as a gay man, what's it like being gay in the NBA?
Well, I mean, being gay in the NBA is the same as being gay in any other sport. You keep your mouth shut. You don't say anything about it. People say, hey, do you want to come out and have a drink? And there's going to be chicks there or something. Sometimes you say, sure, and you sit down, you chat up the women, and you know, it's all good. Or if you're too busy or you've got something else going on, you tell them that, you know. But you put on the appearance for all to see that you're straight. And I'm a gay man and a gay jerk. But here's the thing that I want to talk about, Phil, if you don't mind. Can I just change the subject?
Go ahead.
Jason Collins, everybody is giving this guy, they're kissing his rear end up one side and down the neck, even giving a little bit of tongue. I mean, they're just dragging their tongue right along a butt cheek on this guy because he come out gay, come out clean, and he come out gay. Now, he comes out clean and gay, and he comes out fast. Now, I gotta hand it to him. You know, most guys, when they come out of the closet, they come limping out, and they come crawling out, and they're looking around to see if the coast is clear. And then they come, you know, sort of, I don't know what you call it, almost like waddling out of the closet, you know. Some guys will come out with...
What difference does it make how they're coming out? They're coming out.
Well, I'm just telling you, Phil, if you don't mind me saying, I happen to be a gay man and a gay journalist. Is that all right with you?
Yes, you know, some guys come out slow.
I'm telling you that this guy, Collins, came out clean, quick, and brisk. Okay?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, what?
What are you laughing at?
If you're laughing, man...
Of course I'm laughing. He come out clean, quick, and brisk. Oh, man.
Well, all right, you know, Phil, I tell you what. Why don't you just go ahead and round up every gay you can find and castrate him? Because that's what you're doing right now on your show tonight. Goodbye. Well, I better stay on now because I stumbled over my word.
Wait, I'm sorry?
I'm going to stay on the air because I stumbled over. I was going to have a big exit and hang the phone up, but I went like that.
Yeah, well, that's the way you sound most of the time.
Yeah, well, I'm just mimicking you, man.
Yeah.
God.
All right. So Jason Collins, this guy, you wanted to say something about Jason Collins?
Well, what I want to say is this. I want to say that Jason Collins, as a gay man, as a gay basketball player, he come out, and he come out good. And he come out...
All right, enough with the clean and brisk. He came out.
Yes, he did. He came out, and he didn't have to come out in the environment that a lot of us had to come out in. When I came out of the closet, it was brutal. Brutal. You come out and say, hi, I'm gay. Within 5 minutes, your first death threat arrives. Within 10 minutes, somebody's made an attempt on you. Within 15 minutes, somebody tried to kick your ass. Within 20 minutes, your mother wants to kick your ass. I'm telling you, just in quick succession, I had within a half an hour, everybody in the office, my mother, my brother, my father, and my grandmother, all of them wanted to kick my ass around the block for drill.
When you...
Okay, that's it.
Well, I can't help it.
Bill, if you're going to laugh at a gay man, you have to be tasteful about it.
Huh? What does that mean?
Yeah, God, you laughed at a gay man.
Oh, shut up. You know, some people are going to think that we're anti-gay on this show. We are totally pro-gay rights. Doug is the guy that's over the top here.
Well, I mean, you're laughing at him when he was talking about coming out clean and brisk.
I've never heard of anybody say... Any gay person say, I came out of the closet clean and brisk. What does that mean? What does it mean?
Well, it means that I come out, it was quick and it was clean.
They came down, I know, Phil, it sounds ridiculous, but what I'm trying to do is give you the gay perspective.
I just had the gay perspective and the guy hung up.
All right, bud, try to get Doug back on the air, will you?
Yes, ma'am.
Now...
How'd you get him to call you ma'am?
Never mind. Doug is saying simply this. You travel down Gay Street, it's a lonely street. Gay Street?
Would you stop?
I tried.
I got Mr. Danger.
Okay. Doug, I'm sorry I offended you.
All right, well, I'm sorry I hung up. Where were we?
Yeah, well, let's take a break.
What a dirty trick.
Let's take a break. We'll be right back to talk more about the announcement by Jason Collins, the first major athlete to come out as a gay person. And Doug Danger, gay man and gay journalist from the Orange County Courier, will be with us as well as we close out this hour on this Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, Doug Danger is with us here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we discuss Jason Collins, who came out as a gay man in the NBA last week. And now let's listen here, Doug. We have the Dan Patrick segment as he talks with Charles Barkley, the former NBA star. Oh, you can't hear any audio? Sorry. All right, I apologize, everybody. I thought we could get some audio going, and we were not able to off of this clip. So that's whack. You know what I'm going to have to do, man, is run it off of the main machine. So in any event, what Barkley is saying there is that, of course, I played with gay players. Everybody did. Doug Danger joining us from the Orange County Courier. Do you want to comment on that, Doug?
Well, my comment on anything Charles Barkley says, I think Charles Barkley has done a very good job of rehabilitating himself as some forward-thinking guy. I remember when Charles Barkley was a meathead, and I say that I like Charles Barkley. I love watching him play basketball, you know. But I think anybody who knows anything about basketball and Charles Barkley knows that he was a real meathead. He had a lot of things to say that were derogatory about people. I can easily see this guy as I'm not buying it, you know. But
essentially what he's saying is that they played with a gay player. Do you believe that?
Hold on for a minute. Turn that down, will you? I got my niece and my nephew are here. My brother and his wife are taking a vacation in the Panama Canal. Are you ready for that? So I got my niece and nephew.
Oh, what are the names?
I got Darren and Leslie here. Hey, turn that down, you guys. Go. You want some more ice cream? Go get some more of that. My brother and his wife, my sister-in-law, Caroline, I mean, I love them, and they take these exotic, but now they're going to the Panama Canal, and I think next year they're going to go see the Hanging Gardens of Babylon or something. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but they always, and I love my niece and nephew. I mean, I love them. I love having them here. It's a lot of fun, but they're up real late watching TV here.
Don't they have school?
Yeah, they do, but, you know, it's almost the end of the school year. Both of them are going into middle school. Isn't that right? Leslie, what grade are you in, honey? Yeah, she's going into middle school, and her brother's, I think, going into middle school, too. So, anyway, what I'm trying to say to you is that Charles Barkley, I mean, yeah, big deal. They used to call him the round mound of rebound because he was a big, fat tub of guts, but he could fly through the air with the greatest of ease. That, I never did buy that. I never did understand that. I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. You tell me that a big, fat tub of guts can fly through the air like he's got flubber on his ass. I'm sorry.
All right. Why don't we watch our language a little bit? You got your niece and nephew there.
They're not here right now. They're getting ice cream, man, okay? The point that I'm trying to make is, did you ever buy Barkley?
Well, what am I going to say about Charles Barkley? If he's a big, fat tub of guts and he can still fly through the air like he's got flubber on his you-know-what, then I guess the guy is good.
Well, either he's good or he's getting some assist. I'm not saying there's such a thing as flubber, but I'm saying how does a fat ass like that fly through the air with the greatest of ease? So I don't believe him when he talks about that, and now he's trying to tell me about the gay. Now, I look at Charles Barkley, and I know that guy hasn't even sniffed the gay exit. You know what I mean by that, Phil? Hey, Phil?
What? What do you want, man?
What an ass.
Phil, you can't yell at people like that.
What? You know, I'm listening to this guy. You know what I mean, Phil? You know? Just spit it out, man.
Yeah, he's going to talk about, you know about the gay exit.
Yes, I know about the gay exit. He was about to start going down this freaking road again. Oh, excuse me. He was about to go down the gay road again.
Yeah, that's what he got to say.
Oh, I see. Thank you. And, of course, Doug has been on the gay freeway, and he knows where the gay exit is, but Charles Barkley, he doesn't know. So he wouldn't know anything about gay players.
Well, he may be right. Charles Barkley is, after all, not gay, so's you'd notice, you see.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I don't think I've ever seen him with a woman, have you?
Yeah,
I've
seen him with a lot of women when he goes out on some, you know, particularly visual, like an event, you know.
What do you mean, an event?
Like a prize fight, you know?
Yeah, I saw him at the Mayweather fight.
You did?
Well, no, but I should have.
Whatever that means. But if the guy is, I've seen him at prominent social events with a woman.
Well, he could go to one of those escort services.
Okay, Margaret, what's your point? Charles Barkley is gay? He may be. But the whole reason, I'm not here to talk about Charles Barkley right now. I'm here, what, bud?
Doug Danger.
The guy's got a pair on him, man, I swear to God. Hey, Doug, you know my policy about hanging up, don't you?
Well, you know my policy about somebody saying to me that, that Charles Barkley is some kind of a rehabilitated fat ass, and then you're spitting at me, man. I just told you I'm a gay man and a gay journalist, and I asked you, had you been at the gay exit?
You know...
Have you or have you not broken down and had to turn off at the gay exit?
No, I have not broken down and had to turn off at the gay exit.
All right, so you don't know what's going down. And Charles Barkley comes on, and he's talking to this guy, Dan Patrick. Now, there's a guy, as far as when I look at Dan Patrick, there's a guy that I think has said, fill her up at the Union 70 gay. Okay? Okay, Phil?
Yes.
Oh, are you all pissed off?
I didn't want to yell it, because you're going to be... So, Dan Patrick is gay.
I didn't say that.
Well, yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Well, you did, Dan, because you said that Dan Patrick has filled up at the Union 70 gay.
Right. I said he took the gay exit. Maybe he needed a fill-up.
Well, what does that mean? Does he, in other words, he's dabbled in bisexuality or something?
I didn't say that.
Come on, Doug, you got to say something.
I'm spilling it out. I'm spitting it out right now. Dan Patrick looks like he's been in the fast lane on the gay parkway. And
whatever that means.
Oh, give me a... You don't know what that means.
We're not here, Dan.
Let's clear your throat there, Butch.
You know something? I've got plenty left for you, too, big guy.
Well, I'm sorry to have to say that, but sometimes your voice breaks down, Margaret, and I might as well be talking to Orson Welles. Have a very good evening. By the way, I give your show tonight, Phil, one gay thumb up and 11 gay thumbs down, and I only have 10. I've got 10 in my mind.
You have 2 in reality.
Right, and I'm giving it 11 down, so I'm going to have to find some other thumbs. I don't know what I'm going to have.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here to the El Pacifico, although our Phil Cam has a beautiful shot of Sunset Boulevard in Hollyweed, which is to the southeast of us here, almost directly to the east of us, the way the California coast curves, and we're on the curve of the California coast, the El Pacifico studios here, and if you were to just look straight east, we'd probably be looking straight at the city of Los Angeles and the subsector, the subdivision, the small... unit.
The neighborhood.
Yeah, the neighborhood known as Hollywood. A lot of people don't know that, I'm not trying to bore you with minutiae, but Hollywood is not a city. It's part of L.A. Van Nuys is part of... These are all sections, districts, in the city of Los Angeles.
Well, no, I don't think you're right about that.
Yeah, Hollywood has its own zip code.
I don't give a crap if Hollywood has its own zip code.
Well, why does it have it?
Every area has a zip code. It doesn't mean it's part of a city or is not part of a city.
Well, who did they just elect? They just had elections in Hollywood, I thought.
West Hollywood. West Hollywood. Okay? There's a difference.
Yeah, one's Hollywood and one's West. Wow.
Whee! Ow!
You gonna having a good time here, bud? West Hollywood is a separate municipality, yes. But Hollywood is a part of Los Angeles. Van Nuys is a part of Los Angeles. San Pedro is L.A. Harbor. Oh, these are all parts of the city of Los Angeles.
What about Arcadia, where you were from?
That's a separate city. Pasadena is a separate city. So you have the city, and then you have these districts. That's the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because some people think Hollywood is a town. Now, West Hollywood...
Well, why is West Hollywood... I don't understand. Why is that a separate city?
There's a very interesting story about West Hollywood, and it probably mirrors the experience of gay people in this country, because West Hollywood is it is seen as and is experienced as a gay community insofar as the neighborhood and the way the folks interact there, and they have the Hollywood Halloween night parade, which is insane. It's always a lot of fun to...
Yeah, have you ever been in it?
At the Hollywood costume parade?
Well, it's like a gay parade.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Well, I thought you said you was in it that year with the chaps.
Are you being funny now?
No!
Didn't you say you went to the Hollywood gay parade in chaps?
No, I didn't. I said I watched it. I watched a guy.
Yeah, see, that was it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not judging you.
Okay, bud, what are you trying to get started now?
No, this is something you said. You said you went to the Hollywood gay parade in your chaps.
Yeah, and you were all happy about it.
Wait a minute, man. You guys are high on a mixture of drugs. I never said any such thing.
But don't be homophobic, Mr. Henry.
How am I being homophobic?
Because you're reluctant to say... We're celebrating a young man, Phil, that literally gazelle leapt out of the closet. Now, I'm not saying you're gay. I'm not saying that at all. But there might have been a time when you said... I want to know the freedom of wearing the chap. Not chap, sir. The chap.
Yeah, like that chap there is my friend.
You know, bud, every time you say something, it doesn't make any sense at all. So why don't you clam up? What are you talking about?
You don't know what chaps are.
I know what chaps are, and I never wore them to the Hollywood, quote, gay parade. And I saw a guy wearing a pair of chaps with no pants on once.
Yeah, and you lingered over it.
Yeah. Come here.
Hey, wait a minute. Hey!
Yeah, right in the snoz.
Yeah, you missed me. You missed me. You missed me. Oh, that didn't miss.
Well, Phil, violence won't solve the problem. What are you doing?
I'm going to belt you, too.
A woman.
Yeah, sounds like a man.
Even if I do sound like a man. You know what? Here's a man for you. I'm going to go take a dump.
How's that feel?
She's sick. What's with you all smiling?
Nothing.
In any event, West Hollywood, here's the whole thing about the gay community of West Hollywood. It may be the same in a lot of cities. It may be the same in Miami, Coconut Grove, Loring Park in Minneapolis, the Castro in San Francisco, Greenwich Village in New York. I mean, you go on and on and on and on, these sections of major American cities that have come to be known as, quote, the gay neighborhood, end quote. In the early days, not in the early days, but in the 50s and 40s and 30s in Los Angeles, any guy that was being, who was gay and was engaged in gay sex was automatically the target of a police action, whether it be a police investigation, whether the cops literally wanted to arrest you. It was against the law. In the city of Los Angeles, it was against the law. So what a lot of gay people wound up doing was going over the city line into county territory, and that was West Hollywood and other areas. But West Hollywood seemed to be perfectly located. It was just off the borders of Hollywood, which was and still is a part of Los Angeles that has a great many artists, actors. Even today, though artists and actors don't live in Hollywood, it's identified with, it's a place where a lot of actors live, especially a lot of young actors who are up and coming. There's good rent there in the hills as well as in kind of the off the boulevards there, and people live there. But right off of Hollywood, which is a part of L.A. City, is West Hollywood, which was county. And the L.A. police could not go into county and make an arrest. So gay people began to gradually... find themselves in West Hollywood, bars, restaurants, residences, and what began was a gay community in the city of Los Angeles. Now, I don't know about the sheriff, you know.
Well, I'm back, because I want to say, the sheriff, now that's what I wanted to say.
Oh, that's what you wanted to say after you went to the bathroom?
Yes. I'm not allowed to go to the bathroom?
I would rather you not go to the bathroom and say, I'm going to go take a dump.
Well, you're talking about me sounding like Butch. The sheriff is the lawman that wears the big cowboy hat. Is that the one?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Now, that I find unusual, and this is why I think a lot of people feel that Los Angeles is very forward-moving and forward-thinking. Even though we have a lawman of the county of Los Angeles with the cowboy hat and so on and so forth, the gays felt comfortable with a cowboy. And I don't know if this the entire cowboy idea is gay-friendly.
Well, Margaret, I don't know that the sheriff of the city of the sheriff of LA County.
Calm down. Just calm down and say it slowly.
I'm calm, Margaret. I'm fine.
All right.
I don't know that the sheriff of L.A. County, in his cowboy hat, or whether he wore one or not...
You know, you really need to see a doctor. You're laughing at inappropriate moments. Have you had a CAT scan?
No. You know what? I agree with you. I think I should go get a CAT scan.
Why?
Because she's right. I think I must be nuts working with you guys. I got to go and get something done, and I think I need a CAT scan.
What's that? Is that like an x-ray of a cat? Ow.
You see, bud, now it's just automatic. You're going to get belted every time I hear that laugh. You're going to get belted every time I hear something dumb coming out of your mouth. You're going to get belted every time I hear something dumb coming out of my mouth. How about that?
Well, you don't stuff my mouth.
Now, don't get angry, Phil. That's what he thought putting words in my mouth was.
Oh, that's right.
That ain't stuffing my mouth.
I didn't say that. I said, don't stuff it in my mouth.
But for the last time, the expression is, don't put words in my mouth. It's not, don't stuff it in my mouth.
You're laughing.
In any event, that is the story of West Hollywood, where they eventually did incorporate it as a city. Very recently, within the last 20, 25 years, West Hollywood's become a city. But it was county, and it was a place that the Los Angeles police could not go to make these arrests of gay people. And as far as the LA County Sheriff and Sheriff's deputies at that time, I don't know what their, I don't think it's because they were more favorably disposed to gay people. It may be that the laws were countywide more liberal. And it also may be that there just simply wasn't the manpower to spare the Sheriff Department, assuming that LA City was sort of, because it was on the border there, LA City was sort of taking care of all of that.
Well, did they think L.A. City was going to go in and make arrests?
I don't think they did. L.A. City obviously didn't, and they probably... I bet you they had conversations with the sheriff saying, you know, there's a lot of gays, or whatever word they used in those days. Don't say it, bud.
Starts with Q.
Really great.
Kumquat. Sorry.
So the sheriff's department probably had conversations with the L.A. police saying, there's a lot of these homosexuals that are leaving our city and going into your county, and I just want to let you know. And the sheriff probably said, oh, yeah, thanks so much for the heads up. And guess what? What are you looking at, Margaret?
Well, I think heads up is an unfortunate term. I'm sorry.
Let me decide, okay?
Yeah, but you get hit with a fine.
I'm not going to get hit with a fine for saying heads up.
But in conjunction with a gay.
I'm not going to get hit with a fine for saying heads up in conjunction with a topic about gays, okay? Oh, my God, what happened? My face just all of a sudden got huge. All right, let's take a break. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. So good of you to join us here this evening. Mwah. Big smackaroo, big kiss for you. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, online at philhendryshow.com. You know, a Phil Hendry Show backstage pass. This is Customer Appreciation Month on the Phil Hendry Show, the month of May. And if you go to our home site, philhendryshow.com, you will see just exactly what that can mean to you and yours in the forthcoming months, years, nay, even lifetime. You'll have a backstage pass to our fantastic website. All new backstage pass membership enrolled this month will receive free best of digital CDs. It's spelled out there in black and white for you there on the homepage where you see the Ted's of Beverly Hills coupon. A new monthly membership grants you access to one free digital CD up to a $25 value. A new semi-annual membership grants you access to three free digital CDs, which is up to a $75 value. And a new annual membership grants you access to five free digital CDs up to $125 in value. So don't wait. Sign up for a backstage pass to the Phil Hendry Show today, where it pays to be a member. And we haven't forgotten our existing members either, our BSPs. You're all receiving a free digital CD as well. Please contact our service people and me, and we'll tell you all about it. Don't worry about it. Everybody who is a current Backstage Pass member is going to get a free CD download because we just think you're the bomb, baby. You are the bomb. All right. And I got to say, I think, like I was saying last night, the economy has got to be coming back because we had a hell of a good month in terms of new members of our Backstage Pass family. Granted, we have a very economic price. We have our family price, $9.99.
Are you trying to tell me that your website is family friendly? You got to be putting me on. The stuff on your website, Phil, would curl. I'll say what Frank says. I'm sorry, but it would curl the ass hair of a nun.
Oh, my God.
God!
What?
That was about as crude a thing as I've ever heard.
Well, the stuff I hear on your show is the same.
Well, Margaret, if we're so crude, then why are you even on the show?
To clean up the sewer, Phil, someone's got to do it. And you remember what Captain Bly said to his crew. By God, you'll lick those decks clean.
Yeah, so you want to hear somebody say that? Ow!
Keep him away from me, I'm telling you.
Bud.
You almost call me Margaret.
All right, Bud. I'll call you Margaret. Back off. What are you... Don't use terms like that. It's disgusting.
Frank says it all the time.
I don't care what Frank says. You and I both know that Frank's mind is going slowly as we speak. All right. I mean, that whole thing that he got into last night about... I don't know what he was talking about. It was so bizarre. We were talking about Ray Harryhausen. Now I want to get into...
Well, that's how I was reminded of it, because you were talking about Ray Harryhausen, and naturally...
Yeah, that's great.
Get off your high horse, Phil.
No, I think I'll stay on my high horse. Somebody has got to stay on the high horse tonight, or, you know...
No polo game. Yeah.
Yeah, or no polo game. Thank you. Al Pacino quits Despicable Me in the middle of recording it. Now, this is, as you know, an animated film, Despicable Me. It is Despicable Me 2... He's famous for playing the bad guy, even when he's the good guy. He's still kind of the bad guy. He yells a lot. He makes crazy eyes. His hair always looks like he's been awake for 37 hours. This is the writing of Amanda Crum, and boy, is it crummy. So he was the perfect choice to play a villain in a children's movie. Unfortunately, he reportedly dropped out due to creative differences with the producers of Despicable Me 2, the highly anticipated sequel to the Steve Carell-led animated feature. Now, this is where we got into an argument earlier in the show, I taking the side of the producers, and Margaret, oddly, you taking the side of Al Pacino.
Why is that odd?
Well, because what we were saying was, you said don't mess with Al Pacino. Tell the audience what you said.
I said that you don't, I don't have to sell this. I think that this, as the gangsters say, this blank sells itself. All right?
That's very good, Margaret.
Yes. Very good, Margaret. This stuff sells itself. First of all, Al Pacino is one of three of the most brilliant actors that the American stage has ever produced, and that would be Al Pacino, that would be Jack Nicholson, and that would be Robert... I'm trying to get the French pronunciation, but I haven't decided what that would be, so I'll just say Robert De Niro.
You haven't decided... See, this is, it's endlessly fascinating to me, you with this French...
Let it go, will you, Phil? I'm in the middle of something.
Go ahead.
So Al Pacino, I think, if he were to say jump, I think you say how high. If Pacino were to say flush, you say, well, you don't say anything, you flush.
Right.
So I think that the producers of this film thinking they're going to replace Al Pacino with Benjamin Bratt. Give me a break.
He's a good actor.
I don't know what kind of voice talent he is. But the point is this. I think they will long rue the day that they said, well, Al Pacino must leave the project.
No, wait. He did not leave the project. It was an amicable parting of the ways. He obviously did not want to be a part of this film. You believe that Al Pacino has power to shut this film down. I do not think he does, and I'm not disrespecting Al Pacino at all. I agree with everything you said about him. He is one of the greatest actors that we've ever produced. I agree with your statement about Jack Nicholson and Robert De Niro, but Al Pacino is not as big as the film. I don't think any actor, not even Tom Cruise. I mean, Tom Cruise, at the height, one can argue, at the height of his popularity, Sumner Redstone said to Tom Cruise, you know what, get the hell away from me, man. You're too weird. Bug off. I mean, he got basically let go, you know, by Sumner Redstone.
Who's Sumner Redstone?
He was the guy that ran the studio that Tom Cruise was at. So nobody, and you could see that Tom Cruise is probably the biggest movie star in Hollywood.
Man, you've been reading way too many of those Sino books. You're weird. No way.
Hold on for a minute. I've been reading too many Sino. Name a guy that's bigger than Tom Cruise.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Well, hold on.
No, bud.
You don't think so?
No, but hold on. But I can tell you someone that is big. What about you? Well.
You were going to say?
I was going to say, what about Daniel Day-Lewis? Oh.
Daniel Day-Lewis is a better actor. Daniel Day-Lewis is a brilliant actor. He's not a bigger movie star.
Daniel Day-Lewis acts circles around Tom, I'm gay, but I will never admit to it, Cruise. Oh, yeah. Look at me like I'm the scum of the earth.
You know, let's get off the gay thing. Tom Cruise is a far bigger movie star than Daniel Day-Lewis. Give it up, will you please? Daniel Day-Lewis is great. There's no bigger fan on the planet Earth of Daniel Day-Lewis than me. He's not a big movie star. You know what that is?
Don't breathe on. Oh, God. What did you eat?
Movie star. Okay? Tom Cruise. Anyway, so I don't think Al Pacino can get anything shut down. I think they'll say, Mr. Pacino, oh, thank God, you know, I respect you, I love you, you're a great actor. But no, we're not going to shut any movie down, and we're not going to fire anybody. I mean, I bet you he's got the juice to fire some people, but Al Pacino ain't going to, he didn't have the juice to shut down a movie or have all kinds of cats fired. And I bet you he doesn't even want it.
Well, I've never met a star the magnitude of an Al Pacino that didn't want to watch people bleed just for the art. And you're saying no.
That's exactly what I'm saying. What a despicable thing to say.
It's not to, I'm just saying, just to know they can do it. Clark Gable was wonderful with that. I remember Clark Gable. I read the, I was very fortunate to have known Snooky Roel, who was one of three masseuses that worked on Clark Gable. And he said Clark Gable loved to have people fired just for the comic relief. And I said, my God, that's so sadistic, it's sexy. And he said, now you know.
You found that sexy, that Clark Gable could have people fired.
Well, he never really did. But he liked to think that he could. I don't know.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. That was a bizarre story. I don't know that I really enjoyed it. And we'll be right back, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
And we'll be right back, people, so that I can help Phil save the show.
And we'll be right back so I can save the show and not listen to Margaret with her bad life.
So Phil can't do...
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Here it is, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. We're happy to be with you guys tonight. We thank you for your patronage. Join us online, won't you, with a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. All kinds of interesting things happening. And not only the news, but also interesting things happening away from the broadcast, behind the scenes, as we discuss a number of things. We were just talking about Charles Manson, because I was playing one of his songs here from our library of music. Charles Manson actually had a pretty good voice, but we were discussing how Manson was too weird for people to deal with. Now, Margaret, didn't Frank, was Frank on the fringes of that?
Well, Frank represented a couple of producers at the time that I think had some traffic with Manson. No, Frank was never at one of the sessions or anything, but he did come home years later when we were married, because I wasn't married with Frank when this was happening.
What were you doing at the time?
You know, that's none of your business.
Bud, shut up. She was working. Were you still working TV?
It's none of your business either.
Well, excuse me.
All right, I'll tell. I was down at the Tropicana.
The what?
I was down at the Tropicana.
Oh, man, you're a mud wrestler, yeah.
That's right, mud wrestler. Whee!
Would you tell him to stop that before I cut the hand off?
Bud.
I was mud wrestling at the Tropicana. You want to arrest me and sue me?
I'm not saying anything. They are.
Yeah, but mud wrestling, though, I think that's very good, Miss Gray. There are a lot of people that talk about it, even to this day.
Well, isn't that nice? The point that I'm trying to make...
You were mud wrestling at the Tropicana, huh?
Do you want to just go ahead and sign... Here's a felt pen. You can sign the nipple on my left breast. Do you want that or do you not?
I do not.
I don't know.
I do not.
Then can we move on?
Yes.
So anyway, Frank said that he had some dealings with some of the people that were surrounding the recording, but he came home one night and he said, they played me the recording of this guy, Charlie, and this was, I said, is that the Manson? Because by then everyone knew who he was.
Okay. When was this, in the 70s?
Yeah, it was sometime in the late 70s. And he said, yeah, it's the Manson. And I said, is he the one that murdered all those people? And he said, yes, he is. And I said, well, wasn't there also another Charlie? He said, there was a Charlie. And I said, who? And he said, it was Susan Atkins. So we went around and around like that.
Wait a minute. Susan Atkins?
Yes, he got... It was Tex Watson.
Oh, Charles Tex Watson.
Yes. But Frank, by then, was beginning to evidence signs of the dementia, or the dementia, which is the French, and that is sort of the parallel of our dementia, but the dementia, which the French have spoken of in song and poem for many, many centuries, is a grotesque, gargoyle-like mental state where you crouch mentally on the steps of a library, the dementia and the gargoyle. Now, what is your... Boy, you look like you just had a... epileptic fit.
I'm trying to slow everything down here. I don't care about the French, okay?
Well, you, Margaret, was gonna...
I wanted to get back into a discussion of Al Pacino. No?
Al Pacino.
No, I'm sorry. What was it?
I looked it up here. It's either this one or this one.
Al Pacino, that's right. Al Pacino, getting back to him...
All right, hold on for a minute. Margaret, this thing with the French is driving me ape, okay? You're talking about the dementia and the gargoyle, and now I got Al Pacino? You know full well the man's name is Al Pacino. Why do we have to do this? Listening to you is fatiguing. Listening to you tires me out because I've got to be on my toes, because I got to figure out what is she talking about, and I don't want to offend you and get you pissed off, so you get up and say, I'm going to go take a dump and just drive everybody nuts.
Are you done?
Yes, I'm done.
Al Pacino, along with Robert De Niro, along with Jack Nicholson, was, yes, one of the top three actors of their time. I would argue that Charles Massou was as big as Clark Gable. Now, you may not like... Look at you. You're scrunching your face up.
Clark Gable. That's all I... Is that Clark Gable?
Well, now, look at the bright boy...
See, Mr. Henry, it's really not that tough.
Yeah, it's not that tough, Mr. Henry, if you just
oh, well, isn't that great? It's not that tough. If I just go ahead and I give in to this French pronunciation thing, Margaret, this kick that you've been on, because you think it sounds so French that you speak French.
Yes, are you trying to mock me? Because the audience understands.
I don't think the audience understands. Just because you call the guy Clark Gabla doesn't mean...
You laugh at me one more time.
Or what?
Come at me.
Oh, great. You want to get into a fist fight?
If that's what clears the air, let's go.
Margaret, if you say Clark Gabley, it's not speaking French.
Yes, it is, and I'll tell you why. My very dear friend, Bill Schreuer, and I've known her for a long time. She was born in France.
May I ask a question?
Oh, God, what now?
Bill Schreuer?
Yes.
Yeah, that's her friend.
Yeah, I know that, bud. Bill Schreuer was born in France.
I'm looking at you smiling. Is that a laugh, or are you just being friendly?
I'm being friendly.
Because it's a laugh, you know what for.
I do. Bill Schreuer.
Bill Schreuer was my girlfriend. What about her?
Where was she born?
I told you she was specifically?
Yes.
In Marseille.
Okay. She's got a man's name. It sounds very Anglo-Saxon, almost as if she was born right here in the United States. Wouldn't you agree?
No.
You don't think the name Bill?
I didn't say her name was Bill. I said her name was Bill Schreuer.
What's her last name?
Smith, if you must know. What, that's not French enough either?
No, that's fine.
You see, Phil, if you stop resisting, I'm teaching you about the world.
Bill Schreuer Smith.
Damn you, you're laughing again.
I swear to God I'm not. I'm just smiling.
I heard you gag up like you're laughing.
Yeah, I'm looking closely too, Ms. Gray, but I can't see it yet.
Get off of me! I'm not laughing. I'm just getting the, as we say on the show...
The lay of the land?
Yes, the lay of the land on Bill Schreuer Smith.
Why are you covering your mouth up?
I'm just... rubbing my face. I'm not laughing. I'm not stifling a laugh. I'm not doing anything bad like that. All right, so Bill Schreuer Smith, your friend, encouraged you to speak with the French pronunciation because as far as she was concerned...
It was French, yes. I could call up Bill Schreuer anytime, day or night, and she'd say, she'd do some French talk. It would sound like this. You know, all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd say, Clark Gabla, and she'd, oh, Lizzie Wonder, and I'd say, Clark Gabla, Theatil, and she'd say, Clark Gable's in the theater. Yes, and so this is what you do. You don't have to go all out and learn the language like these people that want the world to beat a path to their door so they can just bend over and pull their pants down. Are you laughing?
No. I was to have their asses kissed.
Hey.
That's a good one, Mr. Avery.
You're laughing. He's laughing.
No, he isn't.
All right. Well, okay. So that's great. So thank you very much, Margaret. But I really did not want to talk about any of that. I wanted to talk about my good friends, Mr. Dickman here and my good friend, Mr. Leonard here, and what we were discussing during the break. However, I've completely forgotten, so we can move on to other news.
Yay!
Here's a story that I think it reminds us of the dangers, yes, of even Bazaball. How's that for French?
Boy, you sound like you live under a bridge.
There's toilet paper in the lower.
Thank you.
It was a sickening sound, the line drive that hit J.A. Happ in the head so hard the thwack could be heard up in the press box, and then silence. Desmond Jennings' second-inning liner caromed squarely off the left side of Happ's head, and the Blue Jays pitcher was taken off the field on a stretcher during Toronto's 6-4 win over the Tampa Bay Rays on Tuesday night. The team said Happ was taken to Bayfront Medical Center, where he was alert and undergoing tests. Nursing supervisor Natasha Keller told the Associated Press that Happ had been admitted to the hospital and was in stable condition. I think the last indication was that he was alert and feeling better, and he'd gone for a CAT scan. That's the last I heard, Toronto pitcher R.A. Dickey said. The ball went all the way into the bullpen in foul territory halfway down the right field line. This is after it hit him on the head. Oh, my God.
Was he wearing a helmet?
He was on the pitcher's mound.
Oh, he was not, a batter.
No, he wasn't a batter. He was on the pitcher's mound. So he got hit, and that's a dangerous, that's one of the dangers of being a pitcher is the position you play on the field. You're right. When a guy hits a line drive back at you, you've seen guys, I've seen them, we've all seen them, make astounding plays on the mound of line drives and even balls that were not hit necessarily in a dangerous direction, but they reach out and they'll stab a line shot or they'll, you know, make a great play. But in this situation, this poor man on the mound got hit with this line drive off the side of the head. The ball then caroms all the way into the bullpen in foul territory, which is halfway down the right field line. Mr. Happ dropped face down at the front of the mound, holding his head with his glove and bare hand. Jennings ended up on third base with a two-run triple. Team trainers, paramedics, and medical officials rushed to Happ's aid as Tropicana Field fell into a hush. It's devastating. I could barely watch it, Dickey said. You just don't know what to think, really. It paralyzes you a little bit. And when it sounds like two bats, when you hear the sound off the bat, it sounds like it hits another bat. It's scary. It's really, really scary. I just started praying on the spot. That's all I could do. Jennings stood with his hands on his head, and other players were visibly concerned as they watched Happ receive medical attention for about 8 minutes. I just saw it come off the bat hot, and when it hit him, I knew it hit him hard, said Ryan Roberts, who was in the on-deck circle for Tampa Bay. I instantly started praying for him. Boy, I remember the World Series. Anybody remember back when Ron Say got hit by Goose Gossage's pitch? And in those days, guys would come to the plate with those half helmets. They did not have, a lot of players could opt for wearing a helmet that did not cover the side of the face. I don't know if they still can or not, but Ron Say wore the half helmet. He did not wear anything that guarded the face in any way, shape, or form. He stood there at the plate, and Gossage let one rip, and it just rose up, and it hit Say on the edge of the helmet. So, in other words, it hit part helmet and part head, and he went down. He was okay. He went on to play, more seasons in Major League Baseball. But it was scary. Anytime you see a guy hit in the head with a pitch or hit anywhere in the head by a hit ball, it is a frightening thing. I hope this man's okay. His injury has been the latest to a pitcher struck by a batted ball during the last few years. Major League Baseball has discussed ways to protect hurlers on the mound. We got to take a break, guys. We'll be right back. Our final segment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. May is Customer Appreciation Month at philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass and have access to thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio at philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We dialed up this video of J.A. Happ. I'm going to put this on pause and move it over here to our video screen for you guys watching on Phil TV and HD. This poor kid, he's pitching here for the Toronto Blue Jays. They're on the road against Tampa Bay. He's the guy there on the mound in the blue shirt. And it happens so fast. It looks to me like he had a really good reaction. Watch as the ball comes off the bat and how quickly he does react. He didn't react fast enough, but here is the windup, the pitch, boom. And he put his arms up, and even as he's there on the ground, he's holding his head. He attempts to look up to see if there's anything else coming his way, as almost to protect himself, but he's lying on the ground. He's not immobile. He's looking to see if there's blood, so he's conscious. And I'm telling you, a CAT scan is called for, and every single solitary kind of and there's Jennings who hit the ball, and he's just very concerned. He's chewing on his shirt, in fact. you know, it looks to me like that maybe he broke the trajectory of the ball a little bit when he threw his hands up, because even as he's laying on the ground, he's conscious and he's checking to see if there is. Here, I should go back. He's checking to see if there's blood on his hand. He's holding his head. Because for some reason, we all know this is very human, when you hold an area that's just been, that has just suffered some kind of trauma, for some reason, it doesn't hurt as bad. I don't know why that is. Does anybody know that?
Well, what do you mean?
I remember having a toothache so freaking bad, I took to doing what I saw in the cartoons, tying a thing around my head, and it actually made my tooth feel better.
What? What do you mean in a cartoon?
Never mind, man.
Well, I know what you mean. I think it's because what you're doing is you're limiting the amount of blood that's pumping into that area that causes a sort of a throbbing. Is that right?
Yeah.
You said throbbing.
I didn't say throb.
Hold it. So she said throbbing. So what? But as we watch on Phil TV, and you guys who are on listening to us on radio, we're just looking at the clip here of J.A. Happ getting hit by a line drive off the bat of a Tampa Bay Ray. He is a pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. This occurred at Tropicana Field tonight, and the ball came off the bat. It's one of those plays, and all of the Blue Jays look like they're in shock. Look at them.
Well, it's a frightening thing. The man's head could have been, in the words of Clint Eastwood, torn clean off, you know.
All right. He's still laying on the ground. His teammates are gathered around him, and the Rays don't look like they're all having a very good time either. By the way, this is an indoor stadium at Tampa, and I discovered in my travels there last week that they're going to build a new stadium, I think, for the ball club, but you need a dome. People are talking about having to have a dome because of the rain and because of the inclement conditions down there. I suppose, but it sure is a bummer, man, to be on a field to watch a baseball game in a dome. I don't dig it. But here you see the Toronto Blue Jay medical staff working on this poor guy who eventually did go to the hospital, and I don't think there's a whole lot more to see. What they did is they put him in a neck brace and immobilized his head so that nothing, if there was any injury there, he's not going to keep moving it around and exacerbating the injury. The Rays themselves are looking at this poor guy. Because anytime there's an injury to a player like that, you know.
Well, what, do they think he's going to die?
Well, I'll tell you, some guys have gotten hit so bad. There have been, there's a history of people being hit with pitches and line drives. Herb Score is a very famous story. Herb Score lost his eye. He was a pitcher for the Cleveland Indians, and he took a line shot right off the face. Herb Score went on to be the play-by-play guy for the Cleveland Indians, so he sort of turned his misfortune into a great success. He was a longtime broadcaster for the Indians, but he was a player and took a line shot right off of the face. He lost his eye as a result of that. People of my generation remember Tony Conigliaro, who was a great hitter for the Boston Red Sox. He was hit, I think, here. It was Red Sox and Angels. It might have been down at Anaheim Stadium. Maybe it was at Fenway. I think it was at Anaheim Stadium. He got hit by an Angel pitcher. It shattered the orbital bone over his eye, a cheekbone. It really destroyed half of his face. And he came back. But he never had, I don't think Tony Conigliaro ever had the vision out of that left eye that he had before. And he was a real prospect. This cat was on his way in the minds of many to being one of the great sluggers. He was on the same team with Carl Yastrzemski. So, you know, this was a Boston Red Sox team that was just coming off of a World Series win and was looking to get better. And that happened to him. There's a lot of
What about Johnny Roseboro? You told me he got hit with a bat.
Yeah, Johnny Roseboro got hit with a bat that was being held by Juan Marichal. What are you talking about?
Well, it's the same thing, though, isn't it?
No, it's not the same thing.
He got hit with a bat, though.
Yeah.
Hey, bud, you can say it all you want. A guy slugging you with a bat is different from a ball being hit and accidentally hitting you. Jeez.
Yeah, but he got hit with a bat, right?
Yes, he got hit with a bat. Are you mean the kind that fly?
Could be.
The world famous Phil Hendry Show. I got to get out of here. The world famous Phil Hendry Show is brought to you by Alpo Dog Food, and of course is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And for a backstage pass, visit us online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. And until tonight at 10 o'clock on the West Coast, 1 a.m. on the East Coast, I say to you and I say with great pride, let that be a lesson to you. Good night, everybody.
Night, everybody.
Phil Hendry.